This is a podcast recorded at CB Expo, Cannabis Business Expo and Conference, on September 16, 2023 in Dortmund, Germany. At the education stage, Nikita Kretu, Franz Josef Simmer, and Ben Nyhaus. Moderated by Sunny Marenhout. Discuss the following topic: IPM challenges in medical cannabis cultivation. Language, English. Enjoy your podcast listening.
My name is Nikita Kretu. I'm the founder and COO of Lumino. We are a recruitment and headhunting service specialized in the cannabis industry, focusing on three main verticals: plant touching, production and cultivation, production and manufacturing, the medical, pharmaceutical, and clinical operations, and then the commercial side, which spans the industry, which is marketing and sales teams, of course. So a lot of my time, I'm not an IPM specialist, but we hire a lot of IPM specialists, and we've set up a lot of cultivation teams from like small startups all the way to large, large-scale cultivation, whether that's in greenhouse or indoor. So yeah, I'll be hopefully providing a HR perspective on the matter.
France? Yeah, my name is Franz Josef Simmer. I am 34 years old. I basically grew up in a greenhouse. I come from a nursery family. I work with cannabis for, it's close to 17 years now. I had my first plant when I was still pretty young in the greenhouse of my parents. And now I've been working in multiple companies in Austria, where we do have a vast clone industry. In one of the biggest clone producer, I learned there the commercial keeping of mother plants and how to prevent them from genetical decay, etc. And now I'm working for Fluence as a HS, horticulture service specialist, and I provide service to our customers, licensed cannabis producer, if they need anything, and also help my eco network in succeeding in the cannabis industry.
I'm Ben Nyhaus. I'm co-founder of SpexAI. My background is not in plant science or not in growing cannabis. Funnily, I never had a plant, and now I'm jealous that everyone else seems to have their own little puppet plant when they're growing up. I think I need to get one. I'm a computer scientist by training, so everything that has to do with zeros and ones and making sense out of statistics, so mainly in the background of machine learning. Back when it was called machine learning, today it's called AI. And so about four and a half years ago, we started in the Czech Republic to see if we can use some computer vision or spectral imaging and AI to estimate if we can estimate cannabinoid content while the plant is growing. So eventually, the ultimate goal for us is to help cultivators tackle sort of complex problems. And take away everything that is really repetitive and mundane, so they can focus on the more fun stuff of growing.
Yeah. All right. My name is Sonny Murenhout. I'm one of the partners of Cultivators, and we help growers, investors, all the way from business ID, business plan, to facility design, and then also the growing support when they're up and running. I think we have a nice mix of parts in the industry, and looking to the topic, IPM challenges. Actually, Nikita and I are just flying into this panel because some people were sick, they couldn't come. So looking to IPM challenges, looking to you, Franz Josef, what are the hottest topics for growers nowadays in Europe?
So, I'm going to take the lead there now as the only grower here with Sonny.
But we come back to the other guys later.
What was the question?
The hot topics in IPM.
The hot topics, yeah. Honestly, IPM is a very broad word, in my opinion, because it starts already literally from the facility design and the site where you're growing. If you're growing in a greenhouse, the IPM differs very much from a closed indoor environment, of course. So in every scenario that I came across, I have actually witnessed people having problems no matter their IPM. So it seems like nature is making its way into indoor rooms. Some people like to call them the EU GMP bugs, you know, but I have never seen so many bugs in the closed, clean indoor system than in the greenhouse. But that's another story. What is the hot topic? The hot topic is that plants are alive creatures and they need to be preventatively taken care of. In the horticulture world, as most people here know, if you see the pests on the plant, it's more or less too late. In food production, it's may not be such a huge issue, but on a medical cannabis plant and a high value crop, we talk about often multiple thousand euros a kilogram. Yeah, you better protect it, right? When you can yield from a square meter 800 grams, as we heard before in the panel, or even more, then you start making a lot of money in a room like this, 300 square meter. You can go up to, yeah, reasonable calculation, 700 gram per square meter. That's 210 kilograms, right? If you multiply that by 3.5, then you're close to 750,000. So long story short, cannabis is a high sensitive crop. It needs to be protected at all times. And unfortunately, yeah, with all the new modern problems like hop latent, where you most likely only see it once it's too late, we need to be even more preventive and take care and do tests, which ultimately also leverages cannabis into this pharmaceutical aspect, in my opinion.
Yeah. And actually, that's the perfect keyword, is seeing and hop latent. What we're seeing or experiencing from clients and sort of the pull towards that part is that hop latent is like a $4 billion problem. In the US alone, so $4 billion lost just due to one single problem in sort of the IPM space. And when you can visually see it, even as an experienced grower, you actually have to kill most of the plants. You don't know what is already infected, where did it spread. It's even not really 100% clear yet how it spreads. There are some vectors like infected scissors or... some talk about even your insects can potentially spread it, or the water in your irrigation system from one infected plant to the other one. And what we want to contribute to that problem, or to help to solve that, is essentially giving an additional set of eyes that can see more or process more information beyond what a human can see. Or far beyond that, to give you a little bit of a heads up, okay, this plant is experiencing problems. Because you already have sort of maybe combined the information with other crop management decisions and nutrients and watering regimes, you can then pinpoint it down. It's like, hey, maybe it would be a good option to go test the plant, or maybe just take it out and be on the safe side. Yeah, that's something that we see currently as a really hot topic on the IPM part.
Yeah.
Apart from the others that are sort of always there and have been.
Yeah. How is that in relation to the work you do in the HR, Nikita? Do you see often vacancies for people for...
IPM?
Yeah.
All the time. I often see that people don't actually understand the importance of it when they first get going. I mean, it often starts with investors who don't come from the cannabis world or from the horticultural world, and often don't place the importance as needed into some of those functions. And I mean, the $4 billion loss in the US alone is the proof in the pudding. So I can just vouch for the importance of a strong IPM team. That understands different environments, that has it. We always look at track record. So somebody who's successfully done this in a specific environment, that's the only kind of check mark that I know, okay, now it works, yeah. This person can do it. So understanding like the background of the individual that you're looking for, and understanding that this person has the relevant experience in the exact environment or cultivation that you're technically using, yeah, I can just vouch that that's super important.
Yeah. That's a good bridge to what I want to say right now is it's the human factor, as we heard two panels ago also by Tim Oates. The human factor always dictates the outcome of your facility. Even with AI, I want to say that humans will be necessary in the future as well. But recognizing a problem is one thing when you have it already, and preventing it is another one. Yeah. I want to start off with an example that I was one time consulting a site in the Kingdom of Lesotho, South Africa. They have very little trees up there. It's above 2,000 meters. There is hardly any plants growing there, just dried grass in the winter, and then it's a little bit more green in the summer. But long story short, what they did and what most of their IPM, for example, is, and that's pretty unusual, but I see it more and more, is they across the whole land or around the land on the greenhouses, they planted rosemary, thyme, lobster claw, and other companion plants, as the people like to call it, because they attract beneficial insects. So that's very interesting to see for me that they kind of build a natural barrier, which I think is a very bio-friendly way of starting this, you know, instead of exposing yourself. Yeah. The other side would be, I have seen in South America a site where the people wanted to grow the plants outdoor with a cover crop. But the cover crop unfortunately attracted powdery mildew, and then the whole plants had it. So it literally starts with little things like this, how easy or hard you make your life in your production site.
Yeah, so actually if you look to IPM, it's really having a preventative program in place, but also making sure beforehand that you know what are your options, curative, that you know how you could tackle or could really cure the problem if it's showing up. And one of the things I think with preventative actions, Ben, you have technology in seeing things quicker and making sure people don't have to use the curative actions.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is, or at least, I don't know, I've seen a couple of greenhouses and I've seen a couple of plants, but for me, walking around the greenhouse or walking around like a massive grow facility, I get tired. Like I get really, really tired on looking at the plants and looking for small little symptoms. You can easily pick up if something's really wrong, but then it's too late. And it's super difficult, and I don't know how you find those people who can do that, but it's super, for me, it would be super difficult to oversee, I don't know, 10, 20,000 plants and look for a little bit of wilting on a single single leaf and report back and then come back to the same flower next day. And for a machine, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It will have the same attention to every single plant. And on top of that, because you can extend sort of the electromagnetic spectrum that the system can see, you pick up even small changes, even like 2 or 3% changes much, much earlier. And then those outliers actually paint a picture, and then with that, again, with a good staff, you can tackle those problems much, much earlier on and hopefully sort of prevent the massive losses.
Yeah, yeah. It's also making sure that you train the people, that you have a team of people who know how to scout, how to do that, how often, and then also making sure you write it down and have your data next to it. I think that's also part of what you guys are doing, of course.
Definitely, and I guess one observation that we had early on when we started is also not just finding somebody who's an expert in IPM or in the cultivation method or the environment that you're working in, but often it's helpful to have a person who understands what kind of pests are in a specific area and they know how to treat it. So for example, if you're setting up in Portugal, somebody who's had the track record and experience in Portugal is more likely to be able to attack, and it's also partly a question to back up whether that's right, but have a, find it easier to solve the problems in the environment as they're already accustomed to what is in that environment.
I want to bridge from Ben. The funny thing is, it starts all with the cleanliness and the hygiene. Yeah. And then when you go large scale in the future, I think one can predict that AI will need to be implemented. We see now projects with multiple hectares of cultivation space, even indoors, multiple thousand square meters, where it's really difficult to break down from the supervisor down to the workers, which are dispatched into the different areas of cultivation, to get a deep understanding of the problems and the different expressions of the problems, and to read the interdependencies in cultivation. As before in the panel was discussed with Carbon Active, that the wind speed, the airflow, for example, it changes the transpiration, it changes the nutrient uptake, etc. And the same goes with correlations in IPM. If you have a dirty table, unfortunately, real life example, you have a dirty table, which may only be cocoa traces because of the workers, etc., and they don't want to clean it, or you have a lack of personnel that day, and then you cannot see that it's not cocoa but root, rice root aphids, you know? So what I'm trying to bring across is that even if you start super hygienic, you clean the tables every day, over time in the last corner of your facility will accumulate pathogens. So what the industry has come up with are more or less solutions to clean your air all the time, clean plants, take control of the rhizosphere, the root zone. I'm talking now on the mother plant, then the branching system, and then the biomass. And if you control every factor in every step of the propagation, now comes the difference of the different phenotypes and strains into the game, which also have different needs and will need different treatments. So, yeah, bottom line, one has to understand the plants, needs to learn to read the plant correctly, and then react.
I think there's an important point, being able to read the plant and read the potential problems. And I never forget that certain medicinal cannabis grower growing indoors, and people say sometimes about indoor, then we don't have any problems with IPM or with pesticides. But truly then it comes also to your HVAC design. If the HVAC is using outside air to bring in fresh air, literally this indoor grower, they had problems because they had a pesticide on their product. They for sure did not use it, but the farmer next door in his potato field did, and that some little pieces came into the air, into the final product. Wow. So the whole batch was destroyed.
I visited a farm where they were obviously most of the greenhouses, most of the cultivation happen sort of in agricultural spaces, not in the city for obvious reasons. And they had to destroy a large batch. And then they later figure out, because they had a too high microbe level on their final product. Yeah, that was because they had the ventilation full open on the greenhouses when the farmer were actually applying, whatever they were applying. So mostly it was, I guess it was just fertilizer used from wherever, which is probably full of pathogens and everything. And then it just spreads into your greenhouse or into your facility. And especially in indoor facilities, it's really difficult to get out again.
Yeah, maybe it's funny because you say about new plants and starting material. With your background, Franz Josef, for me, I see always it's also so difficult. Where do you get your starting material from? And do you keep them separated when they come in to quarantine actually a little bit?
Yeah.
What is your view on that one with your background?
Didn't explain it before, but I come from a commercial cloning and nursery, and in Austria I think it's a very unique situation that we do this for 25 years, so by nature we have found very commercial ways how to clone mother plants. I totally understand the issue. We have talked about this before. You have a production site, you get plants from a third party, and now you're relying on their quality. Unfortunately, the bottom line will be, do most things in-house. There is things I will suggest to people to outsource it, like lab testing, etc. But on the other side, everything that comes to cultivation, every transport is a high risk scenario. And then if you go into detail and now you think, but okay, we can do it GDP, like good delivery practices. Well, now it's going to cost you way more to get your plants again. So it's very difficult. And bottom line, I think like every traditional nursery has done it before in Comec, etc. You start in-house, in Comec it's outsourced by now, but in cannabis it's definitely recommended. Do it in-house, lab testing, get responsible pharmacists that can also perform PCR tests because of hop latent that's destroying crops and, as you said, multiple billion loss a year. So we need to work preventive, even if there is no crooked leaf, still test for hop latent and do that generously and never forget it. Just like I, for example, tell to my customers, do UVC cleaning on the plants. Do it on a daily basis.
Is that because you're working for a light supplier, is that something you look at with Fluence, the combination of growing light and UV?
It's not something that is in competition with Fluence as a
No, no, but are you looking as a company also in that field? To connect it, maybe.
To be fair, we like to leave. Like we don't want to reinvent the wheel. There are companies that are focusing and specializing on that. Our mother plant company is also mother company Signify is also focusing on UVC treatments in different regions. Us Fluence, we do not really do that, but we definitely acknowledge the power of UVC for preventive measurements.
Yeah. If you're talking about a lot of IPM challenges, Nikita, do you see that back with in requests for people hiring with facilities that more people want to keep things in-house?
Yeah, especially the IPM, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I'm seeing an increase in IPM roles. Also an understanding of what makes a good IPM specialist, or basically focusing on track record, not as somebody who actually understands the plant, cannabis specifically, not just taking them from other industries without any training and expecting them to fully understand how to treat the cannabis plant. But yeah, we've seen a definite uptake in, across Europe for IPM specialists, for sure. From a senior side all the way to like people in the more middle level range.
Looking at one of the things, Ben, Botrytis butt rot. Do you have technology already to scout for that really quickly? Because it gets spread really quickly in a growing environment. From the moment you get affected till it's present in 3-4 days, it can be...
Spore millionifies, right? every minute or something.
Yeah, I mean, the part of what happens is obviously we don't see the spores. Even with our camera technology, but and the bad thing about it at the same time is usually it starts deep within the flower, so within the tissue. And we can only analyze what's sort of on the outside of the flower. However, typically what you see is that the organism or the botrytis is sort of taking away nutrients. It's taking away sort of the energy from the plant, or not from the whole plant or not from the whole flower, but from a really small area. And then when you use that and feed it to an AI system, it'll tell, hey, this area is off. It's like not the right chlorophyll A and chlorophyll B content. It's not the right nitrogen content in there. It's like maybe 2 or 3% down, and then the next day it's even further down. And then you can use that and say that as a QOK. Most likely it's botrytis. And then treat it accordingly. And with that you get sometimes, depending on how fast it's developing, but up to a week earlier before you actually see sort of the full typical bud rot kind of symptoms.
Then one of the topics the last couple of years, especially in North America, was all the root aphids as a big problem. And the BioBest corporates, BioLine, they still did not find the true solution for it. How do you look at that, Frans? Do you see it a lot already in all the facilities in Europe?
No, but I have honestly only one time encountered rice root aphids, and that was in South Africa. the example I said before. It's a very delicate topic. I think the only real thing that works against this is the Bovaria fungi spray, where it literally is acting like a pest on the rice root aphids and turns them into zombies, more or less. It infects them with a fungus and then they die off, right? But it's not only the Bovaria spray that you will have to use because of the different stages of the animal, right? We have a larva, we have a nymph, we have eggs, we have the adult. Sometimes the animals, like the rice root aphids, then also fly up into the light, which is very unfortunate. They fly up into the light, die, burn, and then fall down on your flower. So it's double, triple bad pest to have. Long story short, you will have to use a collection of the Bovaria spray on top of your tables, of the pots, on the medium. You will have to go into the medium with hydrogen peroxide, for example, drench the medium, clean it also from the residue that the pest is leaving there, and the dead animals. So it's over a course of time, multiple treatments, and then you still need to very closely inspect the rice root aphid because it's a very difficult one to get rid of. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it all starts with having the right preventative program in place in your grow facilities. What we often see is also that you need to be in close contact with the local supplier, like a BioWest or BioLine, and that they know what are the local hottest issues, because there you need to focus on. And then
sometimes the product is not deliverable, you know, it's not available, then you need to wait another week. That increases, and that's also one aspect of the cannabis industry, right?
Because I just wanted to tell about an example I had with a grower in Spain who actually they hired a grower from North America, and he said, this is a program which is using with the biological control. But yeah, that was working for where he worked before in California. That doesn't mean that works in Spain, because there other pests are in the bigger populations available around and will infect then your crop. So you really need to know where are you, what are the biggest challenges at that location, and then adapt your program to it.
Another big challenge for cannabis is that there's no unified sort of, this is the kind of treatments that you can actually use in terms of chemicals and in terms of bioagents or anything else. Every country still has sort of their own little playbook, and then it depends on where you export your product again. So you have to make sure that you're sort of obliged to, let's say, German laws in terms of microbe level, in terms of yeast level or anything else. So if you're using a fungus to treat your aphids or to combat your aphids, they might show up on your final test again, which is also not something you probably don't want to have.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah,
go ahead.
You can ask questions.
Living soil and IPM. How much more difficult does that make your life?
Look, the thing is, in pharmaceutical or medical cannabis, it's about stabilizing your cultivar. Like, what are you cultivating? You need to do a validation crop. 3 times usually is the number, and then you will understand in which range in your production site you can produce it. That should be defined with the plus minus 10% range. When I say that, I mean if you define your strain to be a 20% THC, it can be 22 or 18. That's your range.
Yep.
That's how you need to set your canopy. Depth and also the light intensity plays the biggest role there. So what was the question?
living soil.
Life.
Jesus Christ. So long story short, you need to standardize your production factors, and living soil is very difficult to standardize. And that again will increase your
risk.
Limitation and risk. Yeah.
It's all about consistency in medicinal cannabis, and with living soil it can work, but you will have fluctuations in the quality you get.
Sure.
And that's why going for uniformity, and if you talk about medicinal pharmaceutical production, the best way to go is with an inert substrate and work with that, because then you know from the start you're clean, it's free of any elements. I don't say you cannot grow plants in living soil. Of course you can, but it's what is your goal? What is your final product you want to produce?
Yeah, if you're going for GMP, you probably want to stay away from that. That makes sense. Right. It's just because it's a moving trend, and it was interesting to hear how.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I feel that these kind of trends comes a lot of from grey market growers, who and sort of I don't know want to call it hippie, but sort of more organic
bro
and
science.
more bro science, more closer to nature and everything else, and sort of a little bit of a marketing side. On the other side, everyone is expecting to get the same product every time. And if you go to the supermarket, all the cucumbers look the same.
Yeah,
and that's what you expect. And that's what people pay for. And if you then go back to cannabis and you say, okay, I want to have it in living soil, ideally grown outdoors, chemical-free, and whatever, and then you'll have ranges. I mean, even in a substrate-grown plants, you'll have, or you observe ranges from cannabis, cannabinoid content between 5 and 25%.
Yeah.
So it's even far away from those 22.
I think that we have all still a lot to learn with this crop, with the whole industry. And the girl said the time is ending. So I want to thank you, Nikita, Frans, Ben, and I hope we brought you something interesting in the last minute changes we had. So thanks, guys.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can find more podcasts on our channel, and we look forward to welcoming you to one of our upcoming events. All dates are available at cb-net.com.